My name is Edwin. I am an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It's our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important person aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be also helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. A literature person, Chris P., and Anita have the list of such groups with their phone numbers in any case. We hope that when you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and understanding. Kara will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Kara, I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Victor will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Victor, and I'm an alcoholic. And here are the 12 steps. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so will injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice the principles in all our affairs. Thank
you. And I'm a little nervous, so I forgot the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information. We have this one. Okay, Dana will read the traditions.
Thank you very much. Hi, I'm Dana, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dana.
The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for our purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group should have but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never to be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation for all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Walter P.
Walter, alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober, and it's an honor to speak here at my home group and any AA meeting. I want to thank Nye for asking me to speak, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I know I have only 10 minutes. I grew up in Brooklyn, Park Slope. My dad was an iron worker, and my grandfather was a longshoreman, and, you know, they drank every day. I'd wake up in the morning, my father would be filling up flasks, and to go to work in his lunchbox and stuff like that. And I used to look at him and say, wow, I can't believe he drinks every day. And I always swore, I would never drink every day. I said, when I get older, I'm never going to drink. And then I saw this George Carlin special, and he's like, there should be a warning on that bottle that says, warning, if you drink this, you're going to turn into the father you always hated. And, that was me. I was just like him. I used to retrieve beers, for the barbecues and stuff when I was a kid. And, my reward was to always for my uncles and my father and my grandfather to, to take a slug of beer, and I loved it. And, life was just about, everyday drinking in the parties on the weekend and stuff like that, and there was a lot of unmanageability. And as I got older, my brother was in and out of rehabs at the age of 16, so I always, compared myself to him. I'm like, wow, I don't have a drinking problem. This kid doesn't get it. Look at him. He's in and out of rehabs. He's 16 years old. Put my mother and my father through a lot, and... I never thought I had a problem. But then, I was working for a financial firm down on Wall Street, and my drinking really progressed. And I started drinking every day, and it just progressed a lot. And, back in 99, I started drinking up to 99, it became unmanageable. I remember my son was born. I was married at the time, and he was 1 year old, and he was colicky. And I remember him crying, and I was home watching him. And I didn't care. I just let him go. And I went in the garage, and he's safe. He's in his crib. I'm going to drink. And that really hit me, and I was really upset about it. And I knew this guy that was in the program. And, I went to the Super Bowl party, and this guy, Matty, he wasn't a drinker. And I was, looking at him, wow, that guy doesn't drink? And they're like, no, Matty hasn't had a drink in 10 years. He goes to AA. I'm like, AA, really? So then I knew Matty's number. I called him up, and I said, hey, Matty, it's Walter. I think I have a drinking problem. And he's like, oh, do you want to go to, you should come to a meeting with me tomorrow. I said, let's not get crazy. I don't want to go to a meeting. I just want to talk to you about my drinking. And he's like, no, you should come to a meeting with me. And I'm like, do I have to speak? And he's like, no, you just come and relax. I remember walking in there, it was full of smoke. This was 1999. And, I did a lot of comparing when I was there. I was like, these people are crazy. I didn't drink like this. I never had a DWI. I never had drank in the morning. I never missed a day's work. I never lost a job. I was never in jail. And, I did a lot of comparing, and I was there for 110 days, and I wound up going back out. I'm like, AA is not for me. And believe it or not, it took me 8 years to come back, and I was really beat up. I had not to get into a drunk log, but, you know, I had totaled 3 cars, all in blackouts. Had a grand mal seizure in front of the whole New York Giant football team from trying to stop on my own, stuff like that. And it was like 8 years later, and I'm like, you know what? I felt like at the time, you know, I was really going through a bad marriage, and I felt like, you know, I was powerless over alcohol, and my wife was unmanageable, not my life. And, you know, I didn't really get it, but I said, you know what, I'm going to try AA again because I want to get her off my back. And, you know, I felt like my kids needed me. And I walked back into an AA meeting, and those same guys were there from 8 years ago. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh my God, they're in the same seat. You know, this guy, Bobby O, I was like, he's in the same seat from 8 years ago. And they're like, we remember you, you know, oh my God, you know, you were here like a couple of years ago. I'm like, it was 8 years ago. And they're like, really? You know, and, you know, I heard the speaker speak, and then, you know, my friend Maddie was still there. And he's like, you know what? I think you should ask Bobby O to be a temporary sponsor. You know, Bobby worked on Wall Street. You guys get along. He's a nice guy. You know, he's got 30 years sober. And, you know, I did. I went up to him. I said, would you be my temporary sponsor? Bobby's like, sure. And this was in 2007. And, you know, after the meeting that day, he said to me, you know, why don't you tell me your story? And I did. And he said to me, you know you're an alcoholic. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, because I've been coming here 30 years. I've never seen anybody walk in that door by mistake, ever. And I was like, wow. And then he's like, I want you to take a ride with this guy, Louis from Jersey City. Now, Louis, I knew his story. He was, to me, you know, low bottom drunk. We all have, you know, a bottom, all our bottoms are the same. It's when we ask for help and when we give up and when we ask God for help. And, you know, I said, let me go with Louie. And long story short, I'm taking a ride with Louie to Staten Island to a Big Book meeting. And I'm telling Louie my story. And I'm like, he's going to say to me, wow, you know, he's not that bad. And I was telling him my story. And he looked at me and he said, dude, you're going to die. And I was like, scared me. I was like, wow, you know, I was like, if he's saying that, you know, my God, you know, what's going to happen here? So anyway, I still didn't really get it, and I kind of got like 90 days. I was bouncing in and out, bouncing in and out, and then, you know, I had taken a summer off from work. You know, we had a reorganization, and, you know, I was drinking really bad, and, you know, I felt like, you know, I have to get back to AA. And, you know, I was drinking, it was Labor Day, it was President's Day weekend, 2009. And I remember, all I remember is I drank that whole weekend, and I wound up with a DWI that night. And I was like, wow, you know, I can't believe it. The cop stops me and he's like, you know, were you drinking? I'm like, I live right there. And he's like, I don't care where you live. And I was like, I had fallen asleep behind a wheel at a stop sign and at a red light. And the guy came out and banged on the window. He's like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. You know, I'm tired. It was like 7 o'clock at night. And he says, you know, the cop says to me, you know, were you drinking? And I said, yeah, I was drinking, but I live right there. I'm going home. He's like, you know, he asked for my driver's license and everything else. I'm like, what about the good old days when they let people go? And he's like, there are no more good old days. He's like, so I was like really defiant, and long story short, I wound up in jail that night. So now all the I nevers are coming true, you know. I never got a DWI, never been arrested, and now my family had an intervention, and, you know, I was separating at the time, and a good friend of mine said to me, listen, you got to go to a rehab. Long story short, I wound up going. A friend of mine answered the door who took me, and he says, hello, Lucky. And I'm like, Lucky, what's so lucky about this? And he's like, you're lucky you're alive, you're lucky you didn't kill anybody, and you're lucky you're going to get a second chance on life. And I was like, wow. And I wound up going to a rehab. And when I got out of there, I went to a meeting down in New Jersey. And, you know, it was like I saw this guy, a friend of mine, who I see in the city all the time. I had no idea he was in the program. And, you know, he came up to me, and he's like, you're Walter, right? I'm like, yeah. And I said to him, oh, your name is Sean. And it's like, I said, you're in the program? He's like, yeah, you know. And it's like, who's your sponsor? I said, how many people do you sponsor? He's like, enough. He goes, I'll talk to you at the end of the meeting. And I was like, wow, this guy doesn't even want to tell me how many people he sponsors. Look how sarcastic he is. I said, I'm not talking to this guy anymore. So I sit down, and after the meeting comes up to me, he's like, who's your sponsor? And I said, funny you ask. I was going to ask you to be my sponsor. And he said, I'd be delighted. And that began my journey. And, you know, like, you know, I never got it. You know, I heard somebody talk about, you know, how this disease can take over, and that was me, you know. I always never wanted to admit I was powerless. I never wanted to admit I was an alcoholic. You know, there was door number one, alcoholic death. Door number two, you know, come to AA, get a spiritual awakening, and as a result of these steps, and have a great life. And I'm saying to myself, you know, door number one, you know, how bad of an alcoholic death are we talking? Can I see it, you know? I'm like, can I call this, can I phone a friend about it or something? And, you know, that's the way this disease takes over. It's the only disease that tells you, you know, that you don't have one. And I was so happy to meet this guy, Sean. And Sean, you know, because I had a DWI, I had 7 months without a license. And this guy, Sean, picked me up every single day for 7 months. We went to meetings. I never did the steps, you know, and I started getting into the steps. He gave me assignments, why my life was unmanageable, why I was powerless, and all stuff like that. And, you know, my journey just started when I met him. And I continued to work this program. And, you know, today, you know, I am a good father. And, you know, my kids haven't seen me drunk in 4 years. It doesn't mean they haven't seen me crazy. And, you know, Cynthia's never seen me drunk. But it doesn't mean she hasn't seen me crazy either. But, you know, today I work on that, and I work on my character defects. And I'm very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and for this fellowship and everybody here. And I'm really excited about AA, and I love AA, and I'm grateful to my higher power, and I have a connection that's just amazing today. And just working on that, you know, just one day at a time. And one woman said to me, you know, she looked at me and she said, "You look really good." And I said, "Yeah, I feel like I'm getting it this time." She said, "Just get it today. That's all you have to do is get it today, one day at a time." And that's what I do. That's all I got. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Jen D.
Hi, my name is Jen, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 12th, 2011. I'm already going to cry. I'm just in a room filled with so much love and acceptance, and I just always wanted to be accepted my entire life. I come from a really, really loving family. We're very close, and I have this built-in forgetter, so I forget what I was like. And I was on the phone with my mom last night, and I was like, "Just tell me what I was like as a kid." And she said, "You know, you were very intense, and my stomach was always in knots because I just never knew how you were going to react to things." And that's kind of how it was like. You know, if things weren't done the way I wanted them to be, I would just fall and be miserable, and I was just really, really sad. Not so much when I was really little, but I went off to this new school, and I just never felt like I fit in. I didn't feel like I was smart enough or pretty enough or just good enough. You know, drinking comes later in my story. You know, I used other things, eating. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is that drinking did come. You know, I went off to college, and first I was really good at going places and leaving, because once I made a decision, there was no talking me out of it. So I went to one college, and after a week, I packed up my bags and I left, and I went back home. My life ran in fear. I was always afraid to do everything alone, but yet I always wanted to be alone. It's crazy. So I came home from college, and then I went back. I got into another school, and I went back, and I was really scared and uncomfortable. And I just remember, you know, it was a really big party school, and everyone was drinking, and I remember drinking, and I just felt at ease, and I felt like I could be myself. I felt like when I drank, I was Jen. You know, this is a disease of perception, so that really wasn't the case. I never knew where the night was going to take me. It would either be a great night and I was really, really excited, or by the end of the night I would be, you know, in hysterics, screaming, and then I would wake up the next day. And I wasn't really a blackout drinker, But I needed to be reminded of things. I just remembered bits and pieces. I can move to New York. I thought I had arrived. I was really excited to be here, but I was mostly excited for the bars. I thought, wow, I can like be out, I can drink. Like work wasn't really a big thing to me. Like, yeah, I was gonna come and I was gonna be here and I was gonna work, but I was really more into going out at night and, you know, such a great nightlife here. I drank for a little bit, you know, I was very social. That kind of stopped working. I was very afraid of where the night would take me. So I started to become more of an isolated drinker. You know, the seed was sort of planted. My brother's, you know, in the program. And, you know, I was coming off of a really, really bad night. And I couldn't get out of bed for a few days. And I think he was like 5 months sober. And he was like, just come to a meeting with me. So I was like, all right, I'll come. I mean, it's not for me, but I'll come for you. And not thinking I was so supportive. So I went, and I remember sitting. It was like the mustard seed, and I just remember I was so blocked. I mean, I was in the way of everything my whole life. I couldn't see anything. So, you know, that was like 4.5 or 5 years ago. It just, you know, wasn't my time, I guess. And then I remember coming here for his anniversary. I think it was a year before I came in. And I remember sitting like right over there. And I remember walking in and thinking, wow, everyone's so lucky here. You know, they found this place and they belong and they're accepted. But it's not for me. Like, I'm not an alcoholic. But it's good for everybody else. And then I continued to just drink by myself, you know, really lonely. And, you know, the year I came in, I started to hang out with more alcoholics and I kept thinking, well, I really identify with them. I really do. Maybe not so much their stories, but how they felt. And then, you know, one night, I guess I had just had enough. You know, I have this spiritual malady and I was always looking and searching, and I would buy like self-help books and, you know, how to be happy books, and they just weren't really working. So, you know, I don't know, really, it was like the grace of God. I just sort of I prayed and I was crying and I woke up the next morning and it was such a relief. I was just done. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, and I was done. And, you know, I spoke to my brother about it, and I remember coming into this meeting, and I was really scared. There were so many people, and I was about to leave, and then, you know, Hannah found me, and I stayed, and it was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me. And I remember Hannah telling me to get a sponsor. It was, like, 7 days, and I'm like, I'm not getting a sponsor. I know how to do this by myself. Steps. I'm just going to go to meetings. I'm not going to work the steps. I mean, it's crazy. But I did get a sponsor, Randy, and thank you for asking me to speak. And, you know, we went through the steps. I'm very impatient, which worked out because I was really, really willing. So I think I was. And, you know, I remember, you know, we did the fourth and the fifth step, and it was like 90 days, and I remember doing the fifth step, and, you know, this has been very slow, a very slow process. You know, it's different for everybody, but, you know, I fight everything. I'm really, really resistant. You know, I think that I can do everything, and I've really had to bring God into my life. And I also have to be really, I'm very self-centered. Everything focuses around me. So, you know, I have to be useful towards others. And, you know, I was always in the way of everything, so I couldn't be useful towards anybody. But now, you know, I pray a lot. Prayer is very, very a part of my life. It has to be. I can't do it anymore. I was too tired. You know, I kind of gave up, and that's where the willingness came in for me. And I've gotten to work the steps, and I, you know, I have a sponsee, and, you know, it's wonderful. You know, I'm able to take her through the steps, and it's just really a beautiful thing. And just, like, the love in this room, you know, like, for anyone that's new tonight, you know, I know it's really scary. You might be a little freaked out. I was really freaked out. I didn't think, you know, even when I got here, I always thought everything happens for a reason. So I didn't really believe it was by mistake. It was hard for me to accept that I was here, but now I'm just really grateful to be an alcoholic. I like being an alcoholic. I get to do things sober. You know, I'm more self-aware. I'm not perfect. You know, I get to like go through 6 and 7 and look at my defects and work on them. You know, I pray every morning. I pray at night. And it's just getting out of the way, really. And, you know, AA has saved my life. You know, I can go to social events, and I get to show up for other people, and I get to feel. I was really, really numb, you know, and I've gotten to make amends, and, I've just recently made an amends, and, you know, my friend kind of put up a mirror in my face. She was like, Jenny, you were just so negative and miserable, and you're always looking for somebody or something to come along and fill you. Well, that wasn't going to happen because I was, you know, I had a God-sized hole. So I'm just really thankful. I'm grateful to be here, and, you know, thank you for my sobriety, because if it wasn't for this home group and Peggy, I wouldn't be standing here. So thank you.
And our main speaker tonight is Mike.
How you doing? My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm nervous. You know, when they just said people on a balcony stand up, I said, holy smokes, there's even a balcony, man. It's, you know, I'm not comfortable doing this, but I would go anywhere for AA, man, because my life today is, you hear that cliche, beyond my wildest dreams. Man, I couldn't even imagine the life I got today. You know, it's not where I came from, and it's all a fact of coming here, you know, taking that risk of trusting another human being, you know, and just coming in here, just, you know, I don't like the city, so coming here, the traffic and all that other stuff, and I just, the anxiety and all that, and just coming in here, and I was sitting there, and my head was getting buzzy, and someone just walked up to me and said, welcome home, man. I just felt that peace, you know, I'm home. I can go anywhere on earth, and there's an AA meeting, and I'm at home. I'm at home. I never felt comfortable any place, especially in my own skin. I come from a big Irish family. I grew up in Queens, and I'm a quiet person. And I found a solution at 11 years old. You know, I found this thing called alcohol, and it worked, man. I could be whatever you want me to be. And I chased that for a long, long time. And I had good people in my life. I had one of the most spiritual mothers you'd ever want to know, and my pop was a New York City cop. And from that first drink, the jackpot started coming, you know, and the arrest and all the insanity that we all know. Only that darkness and that despair that only few would know, and it's alcoholic, man. And one of my last runs out there, I was down Lower East Side doing some crazy stuff, and a dude put a gun to my head and said, give me all your money. I looked him square in the eye. I said, do me a favor, man. Pull that trigger. And, you know, that's where my life got to. Man. Drugs and alcohol was not working. And I went into my last detox and a rehab. And it was up in Cahokia, New York. And something happened up there, man. The magic started happening. I hooked up, but I had a roommate up there who... he was kicked off the police department for drugs and alcohol, and he was up there trying to get his family back. And, you know, we talked some real stuff, stuff I never, ever talked about with other people, stuff that was in the gut. You know, I talked a lot of street junk, and I had a lot of friends that I thought were friends and take my back, I'll take yours type of deal, but this was real, this was raw. And, you know, he had a, it was a Friday night, and this guy had his family come up that Saturday. He was all excited because he lost his family. And, you know, he came back at lunch. He said, "Mike, if I do the right thing, I might get my family back." I said, "Wow, that's beautiful. Beautiful." And, you know, that man never showed up for dinner that night. He hung himself in our room. You know, the power of alcohol, the desperation, the fear of not being able to get what you people have. You know, and I went through that, and my counselor grabbed me the next day. He said, "Mike, you're going to die." You know, I used to pray a lot to die because I hated the way I had to live, man, the things I had to do to survive out there. And I looked at this man. I said, "How don't I die?" He said, "Mike, getting involved in AA. Sit up front, raise your hand." I said, "I ain't got nothing to say. I'm a quiet person." He said, "Tell people that." And he told me, and that's exactly what I did, because I knew. He said, "Give it a shot." You know, it was time for me to leave, and he said, "Mike, I'd like to give you a scholarship." I ain't never had a scholarship in my whole life, man. I said, "Scholarship?" He said, "We'd like to keep you here for a little bit longer." No, I'm ready to go. I'm ready. I'm good. And he said, "Just think about it." I went back to my room that night, and I thought, I said, "You know what, if nothing else happens in my life, at least I'll be a little bit more sober, man. Let me give this a shot." So I accepted the scholarship. And, you know, then it came time to leave, and he was letting me go 2 days before St. Patty's Day. And I begged this man. I said, "Please, you can't let me go 2 days before St. Patty's Day. I'm an Irishman who loves to drink." And he said, "Mike, you're ready." I said, "Son of a gun, here when I'm ready, thinking I'm ready, you don't want to let me go. And when I'm telling you I'm not ready, you want to let me go, man. Something ain't right here." He said, "Mike, when you get out of here, get to a meeting. Get a sponsor." And, you know, words and books and all that stuff intimidated me since I was a kid, man. Fear riddled me, and I never knew it. And that word sponsorship, I didn't like that, man. That was like authority figure, and ooh, I didn't like authority. But I knew I had to get one of these things. And, you know, I went to meetings in Queens area, and I was watching, and there was this dude there, George, and he had a piece about him I've never seen anywhere else, man. He had something about him, and I watched. I walked up to him one day, and I was sweating and shaking. I said, "George, will you be my sponsor, man?" And, you know, he put his arm on me. He said, "Mike, I'll be your friend." I said, "Wow, I can digest that word, friend." And he said to me, "Mike," I said, "George, this whole God thing, I don't like God. I don't want to hear about it." He said, "It don't matter." He said, "Do you believe that I believe?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, go with my God till you find something you can call your own." And he said, "Mike, I'd like you to go home every night. If I'm going to help you, I'd like you to do something for me." I said, "Anything." He said, "I'd like you to go home each night and read 2 pages of the big book." I said, "George, you see the size of that book, man? That's a big, big book, man." He said, "Mike, don't worry about reading nothing, man." Because I was scared to death. I was scared to death I wouldn't get what you people have. Next thing you know, he's inviting me in his home. I said, "George, I can't come over your home. If your wife is missing something, you're going to blame me. I'm a street person, man. I can't be trusted. Wait till I get a little better." He said, "Mike, it don't work like that. You know, this man never told me what to do. He invited me into his spiritual world, and he told me what he did on a daily basis, man." And, you know, he would tell me, you know, you hear in these rooms a boogeyman of the fourth and fifth steps, and this man told me the benefits I would get from incorporating these steps in my life. And I would say, why wouldn't I want to do this stuff, man? Why wouldn't I want that freedom this man talked about and raved about? And he guided me through them steps, man. Just so, so beautiful, man. He just was so, so loving, man. And, you know, whatever he would say, he'd say, "Mike, I'm going on this retreat. Would you?" "Yes." "Mike, I'm going to this spiritual." "Yes, I'll come." I would go anywhere with this man because he had what I wanted, man. He had a peace been trying to find since I was 11 years old, and he was offering it to me. And we went to this spiritual thing one time. There were a lot of people there, man, a lot more than this. And this guy did his whole thing, and when there's a lot of people, I don't hear. I get like, I don't know, I just get claustrophobic or something, and I don't hear really what's going on. But after the thing was, the people were coming out who were doing a whole praying, and it was packed. And I was just standing off to the side with him and his wife, and this dude walked out, and he walked right over to me, and he put his hand on me, and he said a couple of words, and he took off. And George was like, "Whoa, what the heck did he just tell you?" He said, "God loves me, and I'm going to be okay, man." He said, "Wow, I've been telling you that for a long time, man. I'm going to be okay." You know, I've been blessed with unbelievable people in my life, man. Some real, true, true friends. You know, I didn't know what friendship was all about, you know. And because of these rooms, because of that desperation, you know, we got a bond, man. We got a bond, and all we got to do is just not drink. Even if you do drink, just come here anyway, man. Give this stuff a shot. And, you know, I've been blessed, man. I've been truly, truly blessed. These, you know, I'm thinking about anniversary. On the way over here, I was thinking about my anniversary because it's coming up. And, you know, I'm in transitions with home groups, and I wasn't going to celebrate, man. And, I was just thinking about all the magic that has gone on in my anniversaries, you know, over the years. My first anniversary, I was at a group where the tradition was that the parents of the alcoholic would give them cake. I was like, man, I can't let, and I would watch, and I'd see people go up there and hug their parents. I said, I can't hug my freaking parents. They never hugged me in my life, man. So how am I going to do this? All this noise in my head, I can't do it. But I had to do it. You know, this is what they told me to do, have my parents give me the cake. And my first anniversary, I went up to get a cake. My pop had the cake, and he held it. He put it down, hugged me, and told me he loved me. Man, that's stuff that you didn't talk about like that, man. That's a power. There's something in these rooms. It does things to people you can't explain, man. Even non-alcoholics, there's something that happens to you. Just show up, and a magic will happen, you know. And, you know, it's just another anniversary. I had a buddy of mine who was in a coma. He was in a coma for a long time due to this drugs and alcohol. And he came out of the coma. He jumped into this AA stuff, man. He was on fire. And I asked him, 90 days, I asked him, would he speak at one of my anniversaries? He said, Mike, I'd be on it. He says, there's one thing. I wear a suit when I speak. I said, I don't care if you come naked. I really don't. I just want you to speak at my anniversary, man. And, to see this man blossom today, man, it's beautiful, beautiful stuff. You know, there's tragedies. I'm going all, that's where my head's at, and that's where you're going to get it. You know, I got this young kid who I was helping out. I got a home group up in Woodstock, New York, and there's a young kid up there who just had a baby boy, and he's telling me, Mike, I can't sleep at night. I said, you can't sleep at night. I was newly sober, and I was in a little tiny studio apartment in Queens, a little basement apartment with a microwave and a little refrigerator, and my wife was blessed with triplet girls, man, and, you know, overwhelming. But where do I go? I go to AA, man. I tell people about how overwhelmed I am, and they, you know, I go to the intensive care unit over here in Manhattan, and, I never held a baby in my life, and a nurse gives me this, shows up, and I said, am I doing this right? They said, you're showing up. I said, wow, that's what they tell me at AA. Just keep freaking showing up, and I'll be okay, man. And that's the story of my life. My head says run, but you people tell me stay, man. Stay and tough it out and watch the magic happen in your life, man. And, you know, I'm bad with time. I'm bad with... Yeah, my memory, I don't remember what I had for lunch today, you know, I'm a little burnt, but, you know, a couple of years ago, I come home, it was right around Christmas time, and I come home, my daughters have a friend over, and the girl's crying, man. I said to my wife, what's going on with her? And said, her mom's in a rehab again. I said, you ever think you should give her maybe one of those Al-Anon things? And she said, I don't know. I said, I don't know either, man, but, you know, the woman got out of rehab in that February. They found her dead for an overdose, you know. And the night of that happened in February, that March, she was at my anniversary, this little girl, this little beautiful, beautiful girl. And as we were ending the circle, I just said, let's keep a moment of silence for all the people who've died from this disease. And I was looking right at this little girl, and I closed my eyes, and after we did the prayer, she came running over to me. She hugged me like she was never going to let me go, man. Something happens here. Something powerful, powerful happens. I mean, stuff happens. We all know what can happen with drugs and alcohol. And but, man, give this stuff a shot. You know, I remember George telling him, George, I ain't going to get what you got. You got a piece that's never, you don't know how screwed up I am. He said, Mike, I dare you. I dare you to come through these steps with me. Prove to me it don't work. I said, you dare me? All right, I'm going to take you on your dare, man. So I went through these steps with this man, and you know what? I can't say it didn't work. My life got good, man. And it gets real. I've gone through periods of my life where I had to take care of business, street business. I couldn't incorporate these steps in my life because I had to do the right thing, I thought, to stand up, and I had to back away from these steps. I couldn't pray because I knew what I had to do, and my life got bad, man. My life got real, real bad. I ended up getting locked up. Well, just not drinking ain't it, man. It is not it. I tried that, and it don't work for me. You know, my life gets ugly, and it gets ugly quick. I need to be in AA, man. And you know what? I got a home group upstate New York, and I'm not a morning person. You know, I don't get going until probably about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I know that. I never was a morning person. So every morning when I'm upstate, I set my alarm. And I go to a meeting every morning up in Woodstock at 6:45 during the week and 7 o'clock on the weekend. And I drag my butt there every day, man. Especially in the winter, it's like, oh, man, I got to go to this meeting. And something happens at that meeting. By the time I'm leaving, I see the mountains, I see the beauty, that the magic starts happening, man. It helps me to see things differently. That's what this whole recovery thing's all about, man, is seeing things differently. Because I don't see things right. I ain't got that, something ain't right in my brain. I thought that the answer was drugs and alcohol, got it together, and that don't work, man. The only answer for me is spiritual. And the only way I get that is coming here. And taking that dare and trusting another human being, man. I got some, I'm sitting here thinking back on all the people I got in my life. I have my buddy Bill. Unbelievable man. Unbelievable man. He taught me so much. He was an artist. I'd go over his place in Freeport and he would just, we'd talk about life. You know, this man got lung cancer. And my daughters were graduating from high school. And he just had chemo. I said, George, I know you, Bill, I know you had just had chemo, but I want to invite you to this party we're having for my girls. He said, Mike, I don't care if I got to come in a wheelchair, man. I'm going to be helped there. Celebrate your daughters, man. This man showed up. Then my man, Bill, got too sick to come to meetings, and he was bedridden. And I had nothing to say to this man. What do you say to a dying man? I was avoiding him. And a friend of mine said, you know, I went to see Bill, and his wife wouldn't let me in the house. I said, oh, okay, I'm going to go see Bill, because she ain't going to let me in the house. And at least I'll justify my BS, you know. I went to see Bill, and his wife seen me. She flew the door open and said, he'd love to see you. I said, oh, no, now I'm in for it, man. And you know what? I spent the last 2 weeks of that man's life. It was a gift to be with that man every day. But my head was keeping me away from that. No, 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 what do you got to say? I ain't got nothing, I can't. Just show up, man. It goes back to this stuff. Just show up, man. And you know, I got a place out in Long Island in Oceanside, and we got devastated by the storm, man. Like a lot of people, we got wiped out. And you know, I'm taking all the stuff out of the basement, and I'm doing it with one of my daughters who's an artist, and all the stuff, the car and the motorcycle, all that stuff just was stuff. But the thing that started to get me, I was passing my daughter out of the crawl space, her artwork. She's an artist, and that was killing me, man. Next thing I know, I'm taking out all our Christmas stuff from me and my wife from years, and that was killing me. You know, what do you do with that stuff? You go to your meeting. You talk about it, you know, and It's wild. Within 2 days, I had a buddy of mine from upstate New York come down with a generator, with a bunch of gas, with propane heaters, with firewood. Where do you get that, man? Where do you get that unconditional love? I don't know. Maybe you can get it in a church, but I don't go to church. I go to AA, man. And it is here. It is here. I had another woman show up from up there and said, Mike, I got 8 hours. I'm here to give you some work. She helped me insulate my entire house, man. And, you know, at my meeting up there, I shared about the pain of losing the Christmas gifts and my daughter's artwork. So it was 2 weeks before Christmas. The whole group got together and got us all this funky Christmas stuff, man. That was beautiful. And each thing meant something as we put it on the tree, man. It's, you know, I would go to the end of the earth for AA. You know, I was asked to speak here, and my head said, you know, it's in New York City, man. It's, but my heart said, absolutely, man. How dare me say no to AA? The life I got, you know, I was sitting in that rehab years ago, and I came up with a brilliant idea. I was working down on the Lower East Side, and I came up. I told my counselor, you know what? I got to quit my job. I can't get clean and sober in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. He said, Mike, you ain't got no education. You got a terrible criminal history, and you got a good job. He said, Mike, us as alcoholics, we can find a way to get high in the Sahara Desert doing something funky with sand. He said, you can get clean and sober in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. How bad do you want this, man? And, you know, I retired from that job 2 years ago. And, you know, just before, a couple of years before I retired, one of my daughters said to me, Pop, what are you going to do when you grow up? I said, I don't know. She said, why don't you go to school? I said, I'm not a school kid. She said, give it a shot. She ended up getting me into this school. And, you know, the day before I was going into the school, the day of the school, it was Saturday morning, waiting to go into the school. I was scared to death, man, walked through them doors. I get a call from Katie, my daughter. She's upstate in New Falls going to college. And she said, Pop, how you doing? I said, Kate, not good, man. I'm afraid to walk through them doors. She said, Pop, you're going to be okay. And she gave me the courage to go through that, go through them doors. And, you know, my man Bill, I was sitting in his wood shop one day, and I was telling him, my daughters were up in college. I was telling him, Bill, my kid ain't doing the right thing up in college. I'm going to go up and straighten her out. I'm going to take my bike up there and take a ride up there and straighten my daughter out. So, yeah, Mike, what college did you go to? I said, I didn't go to no college, man. He said, why don't you go up there and take her out to lunch and tell her how proud you are of her? I said, whoa, okay, that's a good idea, and I did that, man. You know, because my head is not, it ain't right, man. It ain't right. I need people to help me see things clear. You know, I need that. I need that guidance, man, because my whole life I was ready, fire, aim, and oh no, man, what did I hit this time, you know? And the jackpots had come along with this, but man, my life is good. It's good because I start my day out. You know, I got my little thing I do every single morning. I get up, hit my knees, even if I don't believe it, try and get quiet, which is tough. I read something to try and get me on the right path. I just ask my God, whatever I'm calling him at that day, it don't matter, just call him. I just say, help me be the best man I could be. Whatever that is, wife, husband, son, father, whatever that entails for the day. At night, I got a little ritual where I get quiet and I look over my day. And if I can look in the mirror and say, you know what, you're a pretty good dude today. I could lay down, I could go to sleep. Peace, that's what I've been trying to find, that peace, man. Because when I'm doing the wrong thing, and I've done the wrong thing in so-called sobriety, and when you go to try and go to sleep at night, you know, talking clean and living dirty don't work, man. I tried it. It don't work. When you try and lay down at night, that's when the boogeyman catch you. You know, and it helps you not go to sleep. All that noise, man. I don't like it. I like laying my head down at night and sleeping, man. And I come in here, I get the reminders, you know. And people have told me so many wild things in these rooms. I had a woman one time sharing in a meeting that she was running to the airport to catch a plane. And she ran into the bathroom, and there was this woman working her butt off cleaning the bathroom. And she went up and thanked the woman. The woman started crying. No one ever said that to me before. The next thing I know, I'm going into a Dunkin' Donuts. I see people washing the tables. I'm thanking them. And they're telling me, wow, no one ever said that to me. You know, looking, just trying to see things in a bright side, man. It's not, it don't come natural to me. Getting over has always come just so natural. Doing the wrong thing, man, just come so natural. But I got to work. I got to get up with an alarm clock to get to an early meeting to see things in a better light, man, because my day's better. You know, my day is better when I get to that meeting. I start my, you know, and I, where do I bring the worst of the turmoil? Into my home. You know, I can so-called be sober. I can sound like a guru up here, man, but I go home and kick the dog and yell at the wife, and what good is that? So I heard someone one time, they told me about a problem tree that they have outside their door. I said, a problem? What the heck is this problem tree? Before they go in their house, they sit there and they rub this tree. They leave all the problems of the day there. If they want them tomorrow, they'll pick them up. But he don't want to bring them to the family. He don't want to bring them to the wife and the kids. And next thing I know, I'm doing this stuff. I'm not telling him I'm doing it because it sounds nuts. But I said, I'm going to give this a shot. And next thing I know, I got my little bush and it's wearing down, man. But all of a sudden, I walk through that door. And next thing I know, my kids and my dog are coming to me instead of running for the hills, man, because I could be a fool in recovery. You know, I could be somebody with an attitude, and I don't like that. I don't like that, you know, and I don't like that street armor. I wore it for too long. I like that spiritual armor. But it takes work. It don't take osmosis. It ain't coming in here and ain't going to wear off if I sit close enough to you. George used to tell me, Mike, you want what I got? I get up an hour early each day. I said, oh, George, I need my sleep, man. Then you don't want what I got. This is what I do. And you know what? I want what that man has. So I continue to do what he did. And if you're sitting here and you're not sure about this, you see something in somebody's eyes, go up to him, man. Trust, it was the biggest thing I came in. I was never trusting nobody. Today, I have no secrets. What a freedom. I was going to my deathbed with a lot of stuff. I have none of that today. My pop, that cop who I grew up with, who I didn't like, he was my best man at my wedding. That's the gifts of these rooms, man. It's my life is good. I don't pray to die today. I pray to learn how to live, man. And it comes from coming to a place like this and dressing up when I don't want to. You know, because this stuff ain't natural, man. But I do it anyway. I really do it anyway. I would do anything for AA, man, because I got a life. You know, I go out to Sturgis every year on my bike. And that insanity, you ride down this road right outside the craziness of Sturgis, you see a big sign, Friends of Bill W's welcome. Next thing I know, I get that piece all over, and I go down there, and there we are, man. In the midst of insanity, there we are. We got the peace. It ain't quiet in that storm. Storm's coming. How do I find peace amongst that storm, man? You know, I went to this 11-step meeting the other night up in the mountains of Woodstock. I walk in, they're taking their shoes off. I said, I got freaking holes in my socks. I can't take my shoes off. And I said, you know what? This is AA, man. They don't care if I have holes in my socks or different colored socks. It don't matter. I just felt at home, man. Just show up, you know, and if you see something, grab onto them and ask for help. Ask for help. This stuff works, man. I want to thank the Atlantic Group for asking me to share, man. Thank you.